very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I'm glad you are. Andrew Herman will be along a little bit later from DNA Info Chicago. We like to talk about openings and closings. And one of the things we're looking at today is a car dealership. I think it's up on the northwest side, a family company moving to open up a car dealership, getting neighborhood approval, and just what's involved in that. I learned a couple things in reading the story in DNA Info, and hopefully you will as well. Suzanne Mushin will be here a little bit later. And Justin Schiffman is the founder and CEO of Next Tier Education. And as I understand this, I was reading about it, it's an online college search assistance program in a way. So if you're trying to cross all your T's, dot all your I's, and figure out what to do next with your kid in college, Next Tier Education, they say, can help. So we'll kick that around a little bit later. But we start on Tuesdays with John Najarian, the great John Najarian. You see him on CNBC at Najarian Family Offices. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. And good afternoon, my friend. Thanks for taking time to talk to us today.
Always good to be with you, Steve, and the great sounds like I'm a magician or something.
Well, let's see a couple of tricks. I don't know. You predicted the Trump victory, so that's something.
That's something. Let's see if we can get some stocks working that are starting to really percolate to the upside here, Stephen.
Well, that's what, you know, positive. And we've talked about that a couple of times, this Trump rally. Is it sort of a faux? Will there be a drop? And every time it looks like things might fall off a little bit, things pick up. And a lot of good economic news out today.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing in the short term, we've got two of them heading our way. One is OPEC tomorrow, which will actually be tonight, depending on when you go to sleep, because there's an OPEC meeting in Vienna tomorrow. And I think it's going to be difficult to get agreement out of them about production cuts, and that's why you've seen crude oscillate the way it has. And then we've got December, the Fed meeting, and Mr. Powell, or Fed Representative Powell, came out today and said more or less what I think you and I both believe, Stephen, and that is that the conditions are right for a December rate increase, and the market just shrugged it off. So obviously, it is at this point at least priced in.
Right. He said November made it look more than ever like December's probably a good idea.
Yes, sir.
Talk to me.
And I think he is correct about that.
Walk me through the OPEC situation, because they're trying, the OPEC countries are sort of fighting amongst themselves, right? Iran wants to limit, and correct me because I'm very fuzzy on this, but Iran wants to sort of limit output to bring the price up. Saudi Arabia, not too happy with Iran, might glut the market to keep the prices down. Is that where we are?
True. Iran, of course, had its crude oil off of most of the global market for the better part of two decades, going up on three decades because of the hostage situation under President Carter and so forth, and some of the problems that had flared up with them being a sponsor of terrorism and so forth. Countries around the world had banded against them. Now, that has been rolled back, and they can come back onto the global markets. Their production isn't quite up to speed yet, but nonetheless, they both need the money, and they want to rebuild their infrastructure for production of crude oil in particular. All of that out there, and the fact that they are more or less an enemy of Saudi Arabia, means the Saudis are unlikely to agree to production cuts on their side as Iran is ramping up production. So Russia pulled out of the meeting already tomorrow, the OPEC meeting, and I think we're unlikely to get an agreement on production cuts. But that doesn't mean that we couldn't actually see crude rally, depending how some of the inventories have been drawn down around the world. But here at home, I don't think the inventories have been drawn down much.
And so, you know, we tend to say that's great. Lower gas prices, lower oil prices, good for everyone. When it gets to a certain level, that's not necessarily the case, is it?
Right. It's in fact, challenging for some of the biggest banks who lend to those oil producers and then worry about the safety of the asset that they've lent against. But overall, I don't see anything in the cards that says that this should be a big meeting like it was 2 years ago when crude fell from 78 to about 50 very quickly after that big OPEC meeting in Vienna 2 years ago. So I think this is going to be something that's behind us pretty quick.
I don't know if you've looked around, John Najarian, but everything's coming up rosy. Consumer sentiment, sky high. Adobe says that $3.39 billion spent on Cyber Monday, up 10% from last year, and the GDP up 3.2%, stronger than expected, and the highest level in 2 years. So is the sky the limit, or are all these aberrations?
No, I do think that we're going to see higher growth. The Organization for Economic Co-Development, OECD, they've come out and actually raised their projections for where they see markets, both domestically here in the United States. They're an international group, this OECD. But they've come out and said that they believe U.S. growth is going to be moving close to 4%. Which would be amazing. That's what Mr. Trump had predicted. And the global growth would follow. We'll see if it plays out that way. But as you said, Stephen, that's awfully optimistic from folks that just 3 weeks or a month ago were pretty pessimistic.
The Donald Trump, the president-elect, continues to hold meetings. A lot of people are talking about the Secretary of State choice, Mitt Romney, and Bob Corker, the senator, are at Trump Hour today, David Petraeus yesterday. But I also see that the Goldman Sachs president, Gary Cohn, is meeting at Trump Tower with Donald Trump today. I just wonder what your take on that is. Is that about a government position? Is that about going to school a little bit? Is that about burying hatchets or making peace? Or what do you see there?
All of the above. Yeah. I think you very accurately called all of the above. The Mr. Cohen and his firm, Goldman Sachs, were big backers of Hillary Clinton, but they're never going to put all their bets on one side of the table. So I'm sure they had some support for Mr. Trump. And now that he's in, I think it won't be strange to see perhaps a Goldman or a former Goldman person as either the Secretary of the Treasury. I think that could be, you know, either Mr. Mnuchin or Mr. Cohen, depending on what the Senate approves and what the background checks look like.
You have a stock tip for us today, John?
Boy, Disney, a lot of upside call buying. That's one that, again, the pessimism reigned for months and months. And now with Rogue One, that Star Wars prequel that's coming out in mid-December, along with a bunch of other very popular movies, both coming our way through the Marvel, for instance, Logan, I think it's called, the Wolverine. I think they've got a lot of reasons to like the stock here.
I'm gonna make you be Roger Ebert here. Are they behind that Hawaiian film that's out now, right?
Yep, with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah.
Couldn't be a more
Moana. You're right.
Couldn't be a more popular person as far as this is the guy that did the Hamilton musical on Broadway, and then he stars with The Rock, and I forget the actress, I apologize, but the actress in this one, and I think it's globally on track to do a quarter of a billion or better. That would be blowout numbers for basically a first time out of the blocks animation movie with The Rock.
Yeah, and I would tell you the name of the actress, but every time Michael Heideman gives me a name in my ear, I mess it up. So I'm not even going to try.
Okay.
John Najarian.
I buy Disney. We bought it for clients, and we were already long that one today.
Nice to talk to you again today. I look forward to next week.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:22. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And Michael Heideman, the producer of the program, is playing Blondie. That must mean that Andrew Herman is in the studio. I don't know why.
What's the connection?
I don't know what there would be, but it's good to have you here, Andrew, from DNA Info. We talk about openings and closings in the city and suburbs. And okay, so there's the Made Right butter. I want to get to that. And
yeah.
The turkey molds for butter.
Yeah.
Hopefully you don't still have one in your fridge. They're all gone. But I want to start with this Marino Auto Dealership up in Jefferson Park. I really had never thought too much about the openings or closings of a car dealership.
And
you're going through it in Jefferson Park. What's up?
Well, so in the 3600 block of North Milwaukee, as you say, the Marino Group is looking to open a new location. They're already in Portage Park. They have a Chrysler Jeep place in Portage Park, not too far from there. And then they're going to open up another one, and they're looking to sell imports there. And as we were talking before we went on the air here about car dealerships, and what I know about them, and one of the things I know about them is that they like to have a bunch of different brands in case, you know, one brand gets hot and another brand gets cold, and for whatever reason people don't want to buy the brand you're selling, so you have to have a lot to offer.
So they're kind of parallel loyalties, I guess, because you think of your Ford dealer as a Ford dealer, but he might be a Chevy dealer around the corner, right?
Yeah.
They're not necessarily as aligned with the make of a car as you might be or you might think.
Right. Right. Well, I think we see car dealers come and go. There's about 18,000 of them in the United States right now, and it's been kind of flat for years. And this is like way down from like the 1980s. There were 30,000 dealers, so there's a lot fewer dealers.
Any idea why that would be?
Well, the economy tanked, and that was very harmful to car dealers. Some brands went out of business. Mercury, you can't buy a Mercury, and
you can buy mine. I've got a Mercury.
Do you?
Yeah.
But it's a good business to be in these days. Cars, last year, they set a record for car sales, 17.5 million, and this year they're looking at maybe around the same.
Well, that's what I wondered because, they say car sales are doing very well. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't there be dealers unless the dealers have consolidated more? There are many more, like CarMax is a relatively new, right?
Right, you have those
It's
big,
easier to
big
go
places.
To these places now and buy used cars, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, some of them have this deal where there's no haggle. So depending on whether or not you like to haggle.
I remember doing an Extension 720 show, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, filling in for Milt Rosenberg, mm-hmm. and we were talking about the future of buying cars, how you would do it online. And we're not quite there yet, are we?
No, but from what I've read about car dealerships and how they run today, the customers come in with lots of knowledge,
sure.
more knowledge than the salesmen themselves.
So this Marino Auto dealership, what struck me about the story was they don't know what cars they're going to sell yet, right? They're going to get the spot, and once they get the geography, then they go to the car manufacturers and say, here's what we got. We want to sell your car.
Right. And here's the dealership, and they're ready to go. And like I say, they're going to move into maybe selling some imports like Hondas or Toyotas or something like along those lines.
Let's get a nod to Danish made butter.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about them last year, I think, as well. But they make those turkey molds and the butter lambs. You can see a lamb, but turkey's big Thanksgiving.
Right.
Do they have anything at Christmas?
I was thinking they. I didn't see anything on their website that they had like little Santa Clauses or anything.
It'd be kind of
like
weird, like spreading Santa's beard.
A little creche or something. I don't know.
Be weirder, I think.
Normally, I talk about new openings and closings, but this company's been around since the 30s. But it's interesting. They're on the far southeast side, 8512 South Commercial Avenue, and they've been around a long time. The current owners, a brother and sister team, Susan and Matt Wagner, and they've owned it since '86, and they normally make this butter that comes in a little cup, right, that you see like at restaurants and
sure.
that kind of not, but they have these sort of weird things like they make the, like as you say, turkey butter that looks like turkey for Thanksgiving, and then they sell about 6,000 of those every Thanksgiving, but their big sales is around Easter when they sell butter that looks like lambs.
The butter lamb.
150,000 of those.
Wow.
Yeah, so at about $3 a pop, it's a pretty nice business.
Okay, so I would imagine that's a nice little diversion, the turkey or the lamb. And we should have a sit-down with them, maybe a Cupid, a butter Cupid.
I will work on that.
A butter Uncle Sam.
Why stop with Christmas?
I think there's money to be spread here.
4th of July.
That's what I'm thinking.
Veterans Day.
Andrew Herman from DNA Info. You can read more at dnainfo.com. Thanks for coming by.
All right.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Q. 1237, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Tuesday afternoon, it's, Suzanne Mushin is here, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGN Plus, and fill in here on the Business Lunch. Thank you very much for that.
I'm like your B team, man.
Well,
I'm like your bench.
That's good. If you like to think of it as the B team, that's good.
I really just like shouldn't have said that about myself. But, I respect the fact that it's your seat, your gig.
Well, I'm just here to support.
I am
happy that you do it. Now, there was the whole pantsuit nation and all of
still
these.
Still is.
Secret Facebook pages that I think Hillary Clinton even referred to in her concession speech.
Oh, yeah, they're a thing.
And so then there's going to be this 100,000 woman march.
Well, million. It started out as like a million woman march.
Okay, yes. Several women march.
Yes.
On the mall on January. In
21st.
Is that election?
I think it's the day after. I think it's the day after inauguration.
That's the 20th. And they're going to march on the mall, and they're going to make their presence known so that Donald Trump respects women throughout his 4 or 8 years in office.
Yeah.
Or two. And
it's looking shorter every day.
Turns out someone else made reservations.
Who knew? This is what I love about this story. There are two things I love about this. First of all, this whole march on Washington, which is, look, this is democracy. This is our right to actually physically show up and do a protest, although this isn't really billed as a protest. And a grandmother in Hawaii on Facebook invites her 40 friends, and the next thing you know, 100,000 women have signed up to attend. Buses are being organized, this whole thing. And then yesterday it comes out that actually the mall is taken that day.
Uh-oh.
Like reserved.
Now, can I just say, if a guy had done that, women would have been all over him because, the women are the planners, right?
Probably,
she
right.
She should have looked ahead.
So I think it's probably the result of the fact that no one was really in charge of this. As you said, there was Pantsuit Nation and all these other groups, and they all kind of merged into a single lane around this march. And people just made reservations and got buses, and nobody asked the core question, is the mall free?
Right, and so there is the Keep the Elk Free America March going to be there instead, right, with 32 people.
I mean...
Park District says, well, we're working with you, right? We'll try to find a spot.
Right,
might not be at the mall.
I don't know where you can put 100,000 plus women.
Go to Capitol Hill. Nothing's happening there.
Oh.
There's room there.
So do you think these marches matter?
No, I don't.
Really?
I think there was one world-changing march on Washington, the ultimate, and everyone's been trying to imitate it since, and it's just never going to be the same.
Yeah.
I mean, Martin Luther King helped change the world by his speech on the mall, and everyone else has been trying to sort of make an impact since. And you know what? I want to move into another topic here that we kind of brought up, but it's one of those things that when you do it in the way that everyone else does it, or you make it a day, it loses a lot of its spontaneity and significance, I think. What do you think?
I think that it makes the people doing it feel better. It gives them an action that they can take, and there's something to that about being civically engaged. But if you follow the bouncing ball all the way out to does it actually make a difference, I think not.
I mean, I suppose it makes a difference if it comes to motivating and future engagement and activity. But there was the Million Dad March, right?
There have been all sorts of marches. The question is, what do you want? So is there a particular agenda item that is most important? This is a little vague to me.
Right.
But it's making people feel good.
You know, it's interesting you say that because that's kind of where all of the anti-Trump people are right now. Well, it's all vague to us, really. I mean, we really don't know too much about what's coming.
You and I, before we got on the air, just said it's like a house of mirrors.
Yeah.
We're really not sure.
We were not sure. And so people who are sure that they don't want to be sure of what they're certain is coming are trying to figure out a way to protest what they don't know what's around the corner.
Exactly.
And that's a little bit of this.
Right.
And it was a little bit of the marches after the election, too. Wait till you have harm.
Although, in the words of Mike Pence, yes, I'm about to quote Pence, this is what democracy looks like and sounds like. So, you know what? Let's make America great, Steve.
I guess so. I just think people aren't listening when it's another march in Washington.
Could be.
And speaking of that, then, so you and I will reveal my ugly self here, my true self. I'm already tired of Giving Tuesday.
You're like the Grinch. You're like the Giving Tuesday Grinch, Matt.
When someone tells me that I have to do something on a certain day, I just shut it out.
Really?
For shopping. I love shopping on Black Friday.
No way.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Wait, did you go to the mall?
Absolutely.
Okay, there's no There's nothing that would have gotten me there.
Why?
That to me is like the antithesis of what I want to be doing on a holiday.
Not me. I really look forward to it. I look forward to the sales.
Oh, God.
Make no mistake, I'm not buying for anyone other than myself.
This is where you and I really part ways. Yeah. I would not have shown up if you pay me. But today is Giving Tuesday, and the fact is, I think the minute they give you a day, you're kind of screwed. You know, Women's Day, you know, Black History Month. Anytime they try to force you into a box to behave a certain way, I think you aren't really getting at the underlying thing that you want, which is to change people's attitudes and behaviors, which takes much more than a hashtag.
So you mean it's a one-day thing, and then, well, I've got that done with?
I'd like the facts on that, which I don't actually have, which are how many of the people who give on Giving Tuesday continue to give to those organizations
year-round.
But
I'm sure it's a huge day for charities.
Oh, they've raised like $117 million.
Right, which is great.
Yeah,
We should encourage it.
We should.
I just don't want, you know, when I tune in Gilligan's Island on the afternoon, I don't want it to be about donating somewhere.
There's a lot of pressure today. Now, I will say, if you're going to donate today, there's a couple things to watch for.
Okay.
One is give to an organization you already know about. Don't use Giving Tuesday as an opportunity to kind of, you know, test the waters with a nonprofit.
To feel like you should. I just got an email from these people. I'll give them money.
Right. Why don't you do what you would have done anyway, but use Giving Tuesday, because this is my second tip, watch for organizations that are doing a match. So there might be a cause that you already care about, and on Giving Tuesday, it's double.
How do you find that? What do you mean?
Go onto the website. Every nonprofit today has a special button for Giving Tuesday, and a lot of them will say, "We're matching your dollars today." Like a funder will say, for all dollars given,
Someone else is matching.
100%.
Someone else is giving.
Like,
okay.
Like you'll hear that sometimes from WBZ.
Where you work. Ooh, where you work.
To say WBZ on this?
Not once is fine, but twice is kind of offensive. But and there are a lot of companies where you work will match, right?
Will match.
So why not find that and double it up that way?
Yeah, so watch for that. And, you know, if you're in doubt, go to Charity Navigator.
And I am all for giving.
You're like that. You really.
No, I really am. It just wears on me a little bit. It makes me want to go into a room and break things.
Me too. Do we have time to talk about that?
We got a minute. Go ahead.
Let's go. So a woman on the south, who grew up on the south side of Chicago, an entrepreneur named Donna Alexander, has the business idea I wish I had invented.
I swear that there was one of these on the south side aside from her, but go ahead.
It could be. It's the most genius idea ever. It's called the Anger Room, where you go into a room and you pay money to be given like a bat or another instrument and you just break stuff.
And she sets this up in her garage.
She started by setting it up in her garage, and now she actually has a place, like a real place.
An anger room.
Yes, it's
how
like
much
a business.
Cash? What is she making?
So it's this is the best part, right? So she charges $25 for 5 minutes to smash stuff.
So you go in and break stuff for 5 minutes.
Just break stuff for 5 minutes, but there's up to $500 you might pay for a custom experience. I mean, like, just go there in your head.
Who's in your custom experience?
I couldn't say. This is too
Not
big.
Even a who. It'd be a what, right?
It'd probably be a what. But, I mean, can you imagine those? But it is a genius idea, and I think we should have them all, especially airports. I feel like airports would benefit from one of these.
Okay, I remember when our kids were young, we'd say, you know what, let's not take out our anger in a physical way.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about.
That's what this is all about.
Suzanne Mushin, hear more at The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We'll check the numbers right after this. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, so the holiday break is coming up, and of course that means spending time with family, eating a lot of food, watching a lot of football, and starting the college visits if you are the proprietor of a junior in high school, maybe even a sophomore. And it's daunting at times. Justin Schiffman is the founder and CEO of Next Tier Education, and he says he's got a plan to make it easier and smarter. Justin, a lot of people do. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Steve.
I mean, you know, this is one of those things where everyone says they've got a plan or a way to make it work. What sets Next Tier apart? Why are you unique?
What makes us so unique is that we bring together what's normally an extremely disparate system. The actual applying to college is one of the greatest barriers of going to college. Of the many barriers that exist, it's one of the, if not the greatest.
How can that be? I mean, I know there's the Common App right now where you can apply to all these different schools at once.
So Common App is a standard system that allows multiple submissions for base questions, but all college applications are different. They all have different requirements. They all have different due dates. They all have different timing. And we provide the actual granular help to each of those steps.
I'm laughing because, you know, in my house, we didn't have Next Tier. We had the big chart that my wife made that and put on the refrigerator, right, with a deadline for this school
here. Sure, very familiar.
And requirement for this one here. And it can become sort of mind-numbing, especially when your student might not be that geared up to try it this school. You know, they tend to lose track. So how does your software work, or how does your program work?
So how our software platform works in that exact use case would be the student would select the schools that they are applying to. They would select what style of application, because keep in mind, many schools have early decision, early action, right, rolling admission standard. And based on those selections, they would instantly have an interactive checklist shared with the parents, the student, and their counselor of every single task and due date for that specific school, for that specific program, within what that student is looking to accomplish or apply to.
So I was going to say, well, that sounds like a spreadsheet, but really you're putting the data, aside from the name of the school, you're supplying all that data in those deadlines.
That is correct. So it's the most robust data set that exists for all of these colleges in real time, keyed to those exact deadlines and dates.
I would imagine that you're doing more than just deadlines, though, right? Do you help students pick a right school?
That is correct. Thanks. So there's a lot of different filters and availability to help find that right fit.
Right.
And we have a database of over 20,000 scholarships that is also searchable to find that right financing fit for the student.
What do you think the students or parents, really, what do you think their biggest mistake is when it comes into moving toward a set of schools to apply to?
I think that it's very common that a student is focused on the schools their peers are focused on, and where we are really where we're able to help broaden the horizons of students or parents is not just with the cost and financing of all these different options, but when we really which is not irrelevant,
right,
at all, but when we really help students drill down on what are you focused on, what do you want to accomplish, I think very quickly we can broaden students' horizons. We've actually had a lot of feedback directly on that of if a student wants to be an architect and they start searching architecture programs, there's a million other different things that can be searched with that to help them broaden their horizon of what they can do to actually go become an architect.
I guess that's part of it too then, isn't it? So I might want to say I want to study architecture at the University of Wisconsin. If I enter that in, then do I get alternative sites and alternative suggestions?
Absolutely.
So something more affordable, something less affordable, all of those things.
Correct. And then we'd also be able to help you with the demographics and the makeup of that school and how your chances are of actually being able to get into that program and graduate from that program and focus on getting you to that goal of becoming an architect.
And so you said you started for students this academic year?
So this past academic year, a few months ago, is when we launched our full platform, which is for students, parents, and educators.
And what was it before that?
Before that, our first year was just for high school students.
Okay. So now everyone's involved.
So now everyone's involved, which is a huge part of the dynamic of seeing students being successful to get them in.
All right, this is a business show. How's your business?
Business is fantastic.
Yeah?
Right now we're growing. We're growing like crazy. We are in talks with tremendous amount of schools. We have over 50,000 students on the platform currently just in our first few months.
How do you make your money from people subscribing to the...
So it is a SaaS model that we sell to the high school educational institutions.
Okay.
And any parent and student can log on to nexttier.com and have a free account and have great access, and then the full platform is available to the school system itself.
So you're going... So there's Naviance. Are you a competitor to Naviance?
We are very familiar with Naviance and often compared, I think, is a better way to put that.
Okay, yeah, or maybe a companion or another. So that's what you're doing. Your idea, your model is to get into the schools and then go out to the students that way.
Correct. So there, we have a lot of success with students being able to access our product directly, and that's been very powerful for us, and that's also very powerful getting a lot of schools involved in what we do. But the focus right now is to build our enterprise business.
You're a young guy. You're new to this. What's your favorite part?
Favorite part would be the feedback from counselors and students about how much they like the product.
Justin Schiffman, the founder and CEO of Next Tier Education. Next, what's the website? Next Tier?
Nexttier.com. N-E-X-T-T-I-E-R.
Excellent. Well, good luck to you. Thanks for coming
in. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.